Oshkosh potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. Today's show, we're going to be talking about a bunch of movies, most of them in limited release, because the week after Thanksgiving is always kind of a dud for movies in terms of wide releases. So the smaller ones we're going to talk about are Wild, The Imitation Game, The Homesman, and Foxcatcher. And of course, we will talk about The Pyramid, which wasn't screened early or given any Thursday night show. So you know what that means.
It sucks.
Anyways, we'll also be having some news, talking about some big news for big movies happening next year. The Trailer Park, box office predictions, and the world-famous DVD Roundup. But first, how you get a hold of me if you want to reach me on email. That's fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. If you want to leave me a voicemail, you can call me at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And then finally, if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. Let's roll into the news. There's some massive news that dropped within the last week. The first one I want to hit is from Warner Brothers, and they have finally announced their lineup for their Suicide Squad movie, which, if you don't know Suicide Squad, it was from the comics. It's a bunch, basically, it's a Justice League of villains. They've got some big names. Now, some of these we've already heard. Jared Leto's going to be playing the Joker, which is the first time anyone's played the Joker since Heath Ledger died. So that's a big news, and it's already been talked about before. We also have Margot Robbie, who was in The Wolf of Wall Street. She's going to be playing Harley Quinn. I think those are some fantastic casting choices. I think that's going to be great. The next one's one of those Arsenio Hall's things that make you go, you got Will Smith as Deadshot. And not that I don't think Will Smith can do it. I think he's a great actor. But his career has sort of just vaporized recently, and he's trying to get it back. He's got a movie actually coming out with Margot Robbie. But he's playing Deadshot, which is odd for Will Smith because normally he's used to headlining movies. Normally it's a Will Smith movie, even like Bad Boys. It was Will Smith and Martin Lawrence as a sidekick once he became famous. Now he's part of an ensemble. So that should be interesting to see how he handles it because he is a very egocentric actor. Yeah, you've got Tom Hardy as Rick Flagg, which should be interesting. Tom Hardy's a good actor. And they're going after Kara... I don't know how to pronounce her name, Dillavenge, as the Enchantress. I'm not familiar with her very much. She's a model. But the other ones make you go, what the heck? Then you've got Jai Courtney as Captain Boomerang. And here's the problem. Nobody cares about Jai Courtney. Why does this guy keep getting roles? He gets roles in these major movies. Some of them are massive flops. Nobody cares about him. Nobody likes this guy. We'll see what happens when Terminator comes out and people don't care about him then. The other sort of, kind of casting in this is they're going for Oprah Winfrey as the villain, which is cool. I'm not familiar with the Suicide Squad or the villain that she would play, but I think that's kind of cool. Oprah Winfrey playing a villain, I think, is an awesome idea. You get a car, you get a car, you get dead. The next piece of news was a huge thing that happened on Thursday. There was an announcement from the James Bond 007 camp. It, not a lot came out, but we got the name of the new movie and a confirmation that Christoph Waltz is going to be in it, ostensibly playing Blofeld. And the reason you know he's going to be playing Blofeld is because the name of the movie is Spectre, which is great because I'm glad to see them bringing back Spectre. It'll be interesting to see how they work Spectre in now that there's no like Cold War with Russia, although that's sort of heating up on its own. This last piece, I'm going to actually move into just sort of merge it here with the Trailer Park because this is the biggest news that happened to drop right at Thanksgiving. And I didn't get a chance to talk about it last week, but it's still worth talking about it. So let's move in. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The first trailer for Star Wars, The Force Awakens, was released the Friday after Thanksgiving. And probably the best way to describe it is you're this 30-year-old, 40-year-old man, 50-year-old man, and you watch the trailer and you suddenly transformed into a 12-year-old again.
There has been an awakening. Have you felt it? The dark side. And the light.
Now, what's hilarious is it's a minute and a half trailer. It's edited for the show, but it was a minute and a half trailer. And it has blown up the internet. I mean, you think that Kim Kardashian's butt broke the internet? No, the Star Wars trailer broke the internet. Star Wars is way better than Kim Kardashian's butt. But it's not all good stuff. I mean, there's a lot of people who are just geeking out over this thing. But there's also been some weird analysis. One of the first things you see in the trailer, aside from Tatooine, is John Boyega playing what looks like a stormtrooper. And this caused a huge firestorm because people are like, wait a minute. A black stormtrooper? And people kind of started to wig out over this. And then people started to wig out to the wigging out. It's that backlash to a backlash, what I've talked about before. First of all, there is no confirmation whatsoever that he even plays a stormtrooper. He's in a stormtrooper uniform. He doesn't have his helmet on. But if you go back to Star Wars, Han Solo and Luke Skywalker were in stormtrooper outfits as well. They didn't play stormtroopers. They were hiding. That's a possibility here. And the reason people are wigging out over being a black stormtrooper is because then people are saying, oh, you're racist. It's not that I'm being racist. If you go by the prequel trilogy, all the clone troopers were clones of one guy who was Boba Fett or Jango Fett. The implication is that the stormtroopers were also clones. And that's not an illegitimate thing to point out. It would have been the same reaction if you had Carrot Top playing a stormtrooper. People are like, oh, Ginger Stormtrooper? That's impossible because they all should look like this guy. And I get that. But this movie takes place like 60, 70 years after The Revenge of the Sith. It takes it significantly later. God knows who the Empire is using. Maybe they were recruiting people. Once they got the army started, maybe it was a cool thing. I have a friend who does artwork for Star Wars gaming. His name's Joe Caroni. He's kind of a big Star Wars artist now. And I remember once years ago in the 90s, before the special editions came out, he let me borrow a couple books to look at because I was trying to get into the writing of that stuff. I just didn't follow gaming, so I never got into it. But I remember flipping through the books that he had from the old gaming stuff, and they'd have fake recruitment posters. Join the Imperial Stormtroopers. They didn't call them Stormtroopers. Join the Imperial Force or something like that. So there could be plenty of people who are stormtroopers and aliens who are stormtroopers who are not actually the clone of Jango Fett. But it's ridiculous to say that it's suddenly racist to make a point of this because they're not enraged that it's a black stormtrooper. I mean, this is not the stereotypical blacks and whites dancing together. No, this is just somebody saying, well, they're clearly not the same DNA. So here's the thing. This is a great example of how the internet, you get a backlash to a backlash to a backlash, and it's just people fighting. Then people would put real nasty things in comments, and people say, well, look at all the racists out there. I go, well, a lot of those are like 12-year-old kids just trolling. They're just getting a kick out of people getting upset, and they may not necessarily believe it. So that's a big deal on that one. The other one that's causing people to wig out is the lightsaber at the very end has these two little mini lightsabers that came out on the hilt. And people wigged out over that. Why did they wig out over it? Well, because it's impractical and it wouldn't work and it doesn't protect anything, but you can chop the end off. First of all, Stephen Colbert has a great bit. If you search Stephen Colbert lightsabers or Star Wars The Force Awakens on Google, you'll find his whole diatribe of why it doesn't matter and why it still works. But the bottom line is, it's a toy. It has always been a toy. And the cool stuff that they make for these movies are toys. They're designed to be toys. They're not designed to make everything practically work in the universe. If you go back to Star Wars, there's plenty of junk in that movie that doesn't work and wouldn't be conceivable on a practical level. Those are all toys. All the aliens are toys. That's what George Lucas did. That's part of his genius, is he merchandised this stuff out the wazoo. But ultimately, I think the movie looks interesting. It looks like it's got some great effects. It looks like it's got some action. It's got the score, and it just makes you excited to see Star Wars again. What I also find interesting is the ships flying, clearly digital. They have sort of a Star Trek Into Darkness look to them, which makes me a little bit nervous. But I think it fits better because it's going to be an all-digital production. And even though people love practical effects, there's going to be some in here, but there's going to be so much digital manipulation, just as much as the other prequels. Part of the reason the prequels don't hold up as much digitally is because they were done in the late 90s and early 2000s when digital effects were still getting perfected. Bottom line is, I think Star Wars The Force Awakens looks like it's going to be fantastic. It opens on December 18th, 2015, like a month after Spectre opens, which is a couple months after Avengers 2 opens. It's going to be a massive year for awesome movies next year, so that's what I'm looking forward to. But right now, what you got to look forward to is the movie review segment, because I got to go to a break, and then I'll be talking about Wild and The Homesman.
We'll be right back.
Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr, still rolling at you, hitting the movie reviews. Some of these movies you may not be able to see in your local markets. This is the time of year that they release a lot of limited release stuff. And me being an influential and respected member of the press, I get these screeners. So I get a chance to actually talk about the movies when they open in a limited release. And they may not even be opening in a theater near me anytime soon. So that's one of the advantages of being press members. You get sent this stuff. The other disadvantage is if they're crappy movies, then you got to watch them. That's always the disadvantage. That's the trade-off. And trust me, just like big blockbusters, art house movies and independent award films can also be pretty awful at times. So let's roll into these. The first one is Wild. It stars Reese Witherspoon, and it is opening in some markets, but I think it's going to have a greater expansion in the next couple weeks. Reese Witherspoon plays a woman whose life is spiraling out of control, so she decides to hike the 1,100-mile Pacific Crest Trail to get her life together.
If your nerve deny you, go above your nerve. Emily Dickinson and Cheryl Strayed. What have I done?
I'm sorry you have to walk 1,000 miles just to...
Finish that sentence. Why do I have to walk 1,000 miles?
Happy trails, Cheryl.
It's just such a typical award film. Every year when I'm looking at these award films, there's always some movie about somebody whose life's gone down the toilet by their own design. And then they have to go find themselves. This is very similar to Into the Wild. That was directed by Sean Penn, I think like 7 or 8 years ago. And it starred Emile Hirsch. And it was about this guy who just wanted to leave his life behind. He went up to Alaska and he potted around. And I actually kind of thought that one was okay. Because it was a beautiful looking film. I mean, it had beautiful scenery. And of course, it's in Alaska. And I've been to Alaska. And Alaska's gorgeous. But it is, at its core, just this guy moping around the wilderness and getting overly preachy and esoteric and artsy and introspective. This is based on a true story, and Witherspoon plays a woman who's, I guess she's married, but she gets into drug use, and she becomes extremely promiscuous and cheats on her husband with anybody who'll buy her a drink. And it's all tied to the fact that she had a really close relationship with her mother, and her mother dies of cancer. I mean, it's this real life story, and I don't doubt it. And that's the thing. There's a certain part of me that's interested in real life stories. I get tired of them by this time of year because everything's a real life story. But the thing that bothers me about these movies is I don't immediately just feel sympathy for somebody because their life's in shambles because they're kind of an idiot. And that's kind of how I saw this movie. I had no sympathy for her. I understand the picking yourselves up by your bootstraps and trying to get things together, but just leaving your life and hiking a trail, that's an interesting thing to try. But this woman who did this was a mess. She was an emotional and physical mess. And I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for the character. So while it's a story of redemption from herself and finding herself, I just didn't like, I thought she was just an unappealing person. And there was not much there before she went on this journey to give me any sort of sympathy for her when she's on this journey. And I know it's connecting to some people and it's based on a true story and it's got a best-selling book behind it. But ultimately, I didn't like her as a character. I thought she was unnecessarily acting out and then whining. And that's what it is. It's a lot of whining. And then she's like, oh, and then she's sort of a hero because she's doing this and she's has no experience. I don't care. Sorry, I just don't care. That's my problem with the movie. Beautifully shot, gorgeous scenery, and on the whole, it's not a badly constructed film. It's directed by the guy who did Dallas Buyers Club, but it's just I couldn't get behind the character. I just was annoyed with her. So that's why I've got to say Wild kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Okay. You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next one I want to talk about is another one. This is apparently the feminist segment of the movie reviews, because Wild obviously is a feminist movie, and it's about a woman finding herself. And The Homesman has been called a piece of feminist Western, even though it's directed by Tommy Lee Jones. It stars Hilary Swank, and it focuses on the struggles of the pioneer women, actually out in the Old West, because it starts in Nebraska, which isn't quite, it's Midwest at that point. But you look at it and you're like, well, it's good enough to be the West, because It's not like it was any easier out in Arizona. Hilary Swank plays a frontier spinster who agrees to escort three mentally disturbed women from Nebraska to Iowa with the help of a claim jumper played by Tommy Lee Jones.
Help me.
I got a job at work for you. My name is Cuddy. Mary B. Cuddy.
Where's Mr. Cuddy?
I live uncommonly alone.
What's the job?
Three women in this country have lost their minds. Their husbands can't care for them properly. You and I are going to take them back across the river to Iowa. I need someone who can hunt and guide and help with the animals on the trip. It's your job, and you swore to do it. That's why I set you free.
Three crazy women for 5 weeks is a lot more than I bargained for.
The story is about just how harsh it is out on the frontier. And farming the land and living off the land in the harsh winters, and you've got dangers, and you've got Indians out there who are violently acting out, and you've got disease, and you, that just shows how some people just broke down mentally. And you have these three women that have three very different breakdowns, but are incapable of having a normal life as normal as it can be out in on the frontier. And so a homesman is somebody who agrees to take them back to a more civilized area to get them treatment and to take them home, basically. And Hilary Swank, because she is without a husband and she lives alone and she doesn't have other things she needs to deal with, she agrees to take them back, and she gets help from Tommy Lee Jones, who's a criminal. And it's their relationship and how they deal with the stress and how they deal with each other. And it's an interesting enough movie. I gotta say, I didn't dislike The Homesman. I thought it was an interesting take on the Western, because and you get that a lot. I mean, back in the 50s and 60s, and it started to wane in the 70s, but a Western was a very typical Western, you know, shoot 'em up, gunfights, hero, black hat villain, that sort of very typical story. Once the sort of 70s and 80s took hold, and then finally in recent years, in the last 10 or 12 years, you're seeing a lot of these movies that have gone beyond the iconoclastic version of the Western, and they're just looking at the struggles of the reality of it and bringing the reality of the Old West to the screen. And I think there's a certain something good. This is an interesting watching partner. This is a movie that's interesting to pair up with A Million Ways to Die in the West, because The Million Ways to Die in the West ironically and humorously looked at how horrible and dangerous it was in the West, and this one gives you a really bleak examination of it. But of course, the people didn't know any better. That was modern day to them. And it, in a lot of ways, this reminds me of Meek's Cutoff, because it does focus on the females of the story and their particular struggles domestically and just as being a female, without being aggressive about it, without banging a drum about it, just being like, well, this is the way it was. Oh, well, that's, and they didn't know any better, because again, that was modern day to them. So it's an interesting movie. I think it's very well acted. Tommy Lee Jones and Hilary Swank do a great job in it. And Tommy Lee Jones does a pretty good job directing it. It doesn't feel as much like a first film. He's gotten the dust out of his gears from his other movies. But this is an interesting film. It's worth seeing, but it's not a shoot 'em up. It's not an action movie. It's a drama. It's a heavy drama and very much a character study. And as realistic as I can tell. So overall, I'm going to say The Homesman kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
All right, I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Imitation Game and Foxcatcher. Guys at the Movies, starring me, the great, the one, the only Kevin Carr. We're going to be talking about some more movies here, some more award films in limited release in various parts of the country. This is a great week to do it, because the only movie, I mean, The Homesman actually was open relatively wide, but the only other one is The Pyramid. We'll briefly mention that later, because that wasn't even screened. It didn't even get Thursday night previews. That is how terrified Fox is of The Pyramid. More people are going to talk about The Imitation Game. Benedict Cumberbatch plays Alan Turing, a troubled but brilliant mathematician who works with the Allies to break the Enigma code during World War II.
If you speak a word of what I'm about to show you, you will be executed for high treason.
It's beautiful. It's the greatest encryption device in history, and the Germans use it for all communications.
Everyone thinks Enigma is unbreakable.
Let me try, and we'll know for sure.
What is it that we're really doing?
We're going to break an unbreakable Nazi code and win the war.
Oh.
I'm designing a machine that will allow us to break every message, every day, instantly.
This is one of the most surprisingly great movies of this year. Every year, everything gets buzz. All these limited releases, all these independent films get buzz, and people are always talking about them, and they're holding up performances, and people are saying, well, this person's going to be nominated for an Oscar, this person's going to, and it means nothing when you hear that, because dozens of movies get that lip service. And I've been hearing Benedict Cumberbatch's name been tossed around as a best acting Oscar. And I'm like, okay, sure, why? Yeah, okay. You know, you got Eddie Redmayne from Theory of Everything is the other one you're hearing a lot of people talk about. Also Steve Carell in the next movie we're going to talk about, Foxcatcher. But when I put on The Imitation Game, I was blown away. And that does mean something because, again, every year you always have this slate of films from the Weinstein Company. And the Weinsteins are great at going around telling people that movies are great even when they're not. And they can win Academy Awards with movies that aren't the best of the year by a mile. Stuff like The Artist and The King's Speech, which aren't the best films of those years. Not even close. But they use their political power to do it. The Imitation Game just grabbed me and sucked me in. It deals with World War II, which is a great rallying cry for movies. But it takes it from a totally different angle. It's not about the war. It's about the people behind the war. The people trying to decipher the codes. The Enigma was a box, a coded box that the Germans used to send messages. And if they could break that, the Allies would know everything the Germans were saying to each other, because you can intercept the radio messages. It's obsolete now, but Alan Turing was responsible for putting the groundwork together for building computers, which is what, you know, we listen to everything on, and we, you know, you're watching movies on computers now. But computers are all through the society. I mean, my iPhone has more computing power than probably every machine Turing ever had a hand in building. We forget what it was like before that, and a lot of us obviously weren't alive then. This movie balances a lot of things. It balances the story of them trying to break Enigma. It balances the guilt and the struggle that people who are in the know, when what they choose to share and not share, and how lives are sacrificed without even knowing they're being sacrificed. It also deals with the fact that Alan Turing was a homosexual. And it's not awkward in the movie because it was essential to how his life played out. So it brings up some of these things, and it doesn't in a relatively matter-of-fact way, because it was actually, honest to God, illegal to be a homosexual in England back in the 40s. This has a direct impact on what happens to him. And it's inseparable story-wise. So it's not, it doesn't become a movie about gay rights, it's involved in there. Because that's the way it was. He was a homosexual, and he was dealing with this, and it meshed with all the problems he was having in developing the Enigma and the fallout from that and what happens in the war. It has such power in scenes of people just breaking codes. Like I said, it's not an action movie. There's a couple shots of wartime, but it flashes to them. The real action takes place with people turning dials and writing on papers. And the fact that they can do that in a movie is amazing, that they can make that not just compelling, but so compelling you can't turn away. It brings tears to your eyes almost watching some of these scenes and the reality of the situation and how powerful it is. I was blown away by The Imitation Game. I think it's a strong movie. It gets slow in a couple points, which you can expect that on a movie like this. But overall, this movie knocked it out of the park. Every year there's a handful of films that I don't see until I get these award screeners. And most of them, I'm like, oh, they're okay, or they suck, or whatever. But every now and then, there's two or three that just shoot up to the top of the list as some of my favorite films of the year. And The Imitation Game is one of them. Imitation Game totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Foxcatcher, which actually opened a couple weeks ago, limited. It's rolling out currently. I think it's getting a bigger release on the 19th. Right before Christmas. We're just going to be so swamped with other things to talk about then. Wanted to bring it in and talk about it now. Steve Carell plays the disturbed heir, John DuPont, who builds a championship wrestling team for the 1988 Olympics.
Coach DuPont has a vision. He would like Foxcatcher to be the official training site for the national team.
What's he get out of all this?
What are you thinking? This is it. This is all that we've ever wanted.
Mark, you have been living in your brother's shadow your entire life. It's your time now.
promise you. I'll give you everything I have.
I am leading men, and I am giving America hope.
I'm reticent to explain much more about the film, because if you know the story and you were to search John DuPont on Google, or Mark Schultz or Dave Schultz on Google, who are these characters that are involved in the movie, you're going to get the ending of the movie right there. The reason this is a noteworthy film and a noteworthy story isn't about what happens in the first 95% of the movie. It builds to that. So if you don't know the story, go see the movie without reading up on it, because it just a Google search is going to spoil a lot. But what's neat about this movie is I used to wrestle in high school and junior high. I stopped doing it just because I just didn't have the time. But I found it a fascinating sport. And part of the reason it's so fascinating is because once you get past college and then you go professional, there's another way to go professional the way you can be a football player in high school and eventually become, you play for the San Francisco 49ers. Professional wrestling obviously means something very different than college wrestling. And it's a fascinating sport because it's a team sport and it's an individual sport at the same time, because your team needs to win, but it's all about you on a head-to-head, and it really pits one person against another. The movie itself really captures what it's like to be a wrestler with the training and the discipline and having to make weight. There's a whole scene where somebody's trying to make weight, and I've seen that happen. I mean, that's tough. But the movie has these bizarre characters, and Steve Carell playing John DuPont. It's a diversion from what Steve Carell normally plays. Steve Carell normally plays the happy-go-lucky version of Michael Scott from The Office, and everything he does, even when he plays sort of like the bad guy, which he did last year in The Way, Way Back, he was still basically playing a D-bag version of Michael Scott. And this one, he's not. He does do a bit of a transformative performance. It's very different for him, and I think that's good. I think it's good for him. I think it's good for his career. Channing Tatum does a decent job as a wrestler. He does come across a bit, I don't know if this was intentional or not, but he comes across a bit slow. And even I was watching it, and my wife comes in the room, and she says, is he mentally challenged? And I'm like, I don't think so. I think that's just how he's playing it. So you get a little bit of the overdone version of the big dumb athlete. And I don't think that that's what these guys were. So it's handled a little heavy-handed. Part of it is also just the movie itself is a very dour film from beginning to end. It's not an upbeat movie in any time, even when there's happy things happening. You also have Mark Ruffalo playing one of the wrestling coaches, and he does. I didn't even recognize him when I first saw him. I'm like, and I heard his voice, and I'm like, is that Mark Ruffalo? And I looked it up on the internet. I'm like, yeah, that it was him. So the movie seems to be more about getting actors to play off type and playing a different type of character and what you don't recognize them as, rather than being a movie that is about the story. But it's a well-constructed film. It's extremely well-constructed, and it's this character journey. So it's not the movie about what happens in the news, what happens when you find out from the Google search. That's not what the movie's about. That's just what it heads to. The rest of it is about sort of a glimpse inside this guy's bizarre mind without being over the top. So ultimately, Foxcatcher, worth seeing. You'll probably see some names battling around during award season as it progresses. But overall, Foxcatcher, I'm going to say, kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Pyramid really quickly, the box office, and the world-famous DVD roundup. Ho, 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 Merry Christmas. I haven't pointed out the Christmas music we're playing. I always like to play Christmas music this time of year. I love Christmas music. I restrict myself by playing Christmas music only after Thanksgiving. I don't let myself listen to it until it's like the Friday after Thanksgiving, because it gets to be too much. If I start listening to it at Halloween, it just messes it up. Halloween's for scary movies. And then Thanksgiving, I like to give the turkeys a chance to shine before we slaughter them and eat them. But yes, we're getting ready for the Christmas season. We're getting ready for the Christmas movies. And nothing says Christmas more than a horror movie in Egypt. Yes, I am, of course, talking about The Pyramid. A team of archaeologists discover a massive underground pyramid in Egypt, only to further discover something dangerous is down there as well.
So what happened to him?
Toxic air.
Usually found in caves and tombs, structures that have been sealed off.
As you can see, the pyramid behind me has only three sides. Not four like the Giza pyramids.
He's saying we can't go in there.
This is the find of the century. You're crazy if you think I'm not going in there.
Stay close and don't touch anything.
Look at this.
What is that?
These carvings tell a story.
This is a warning. A
warning for what?
They did not screen this. They did not have preview screenings. This movie, the earliest you could have seen it, would have been like Friday morning. This is a movie that to me just reeks of being hidden. On Fat Guys of the Movies here, we like to cover as much as we possibly can. But you can't if they don't show it to us. And generally the way movies work nowadays is they'll release the movie on Friday, most common day, but they started doing preview screenings on Thursday nights. They used to do midnight shows. They'd say, okay, at midnight, you can go see the movies. And they only did that for big movies that they knew they would make some money on. It would be worth paying the people overtime at the theater. Ever since the push button projection systems, where all you have to do is plug in a digital print and push the buttons, you don't need a trained projectionist. It was no skin off their nose to run the stuff early. So they start running movies at like 8 o'clock sometimes, 7 or 8 o'clock on Thursday night. It's a great way for somebody like me, a critic, to see a movie technically before it opens if they don't screen it. And pretty much everything gets shown because it doesn't, they just open up a screen, they put it in, they show it at 8 or 10 o'clock at night along with the other movies. They're not necessarily keeping the theater open late. This movie's like an hour and a half long, but they didn't do that. And that's usually, I've been told by people who run theaters, that's usually because the studio won't allow it. Fox will not allow them to show it earlier than release day, even by a couple hours. Which to me says they're hiding this movie. And the other reason is this kind of time of year, right? The week after Thanksgiving, I mean, Thanksgiving weekend's a huge weekend for movies. The weekend after Thanksgiving is very soft because everybody's out there doing Christmas shopping. They've got a lot of other things. Everybody's in the, oh my God, the panic mode that they need to get Christmas ready to go. And it's not until the second, third, and then of course Christmas weekend that they start releasing huge movies. So you have this lull. You see that lull happen the second week of May as well. When you have that first big opening weekend and the second one is kind of an off week. And you see that a lot of times when you have a massive weekend, a second weekend will be off. So this is them just, no pun intended, burying this movie. I've not seen it. The trailer looks like it's found footage. It doesn't necessarily say it's a found footage movie, but it certainly looks like it is. And it looks like a complete and utter ripoff of As Above, So Below, which was that movie about the catacombs of France, which comes out on Blu-ray and DVD this week. It looks like more of the same. It looks like a crappy found footage movie. I don't even know if I'm going to see it. I'm not going to waste my time to sneak out on the weekend to check this movie out. You guys aren't going to care about it because next we're going to be talking about other movies. Bigger movies. Another movie that Fox isn't showing me, which is Exodus. We'll talk about that next week. The pyramid gets a preemptive suck. That is the rules from Fat Guys. If you make it impossible for me to see the movie, it's got to suck. So the pyramid has to suck.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys in the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Last week, as I talked about, Thanksgiving's usually a huge weekend for movies, and it was. I said that Mockingjay was going to win the weekend with $50 million. It made, actually, a little bit more than that, about $57 for the weekend. At the end of the weekend, it had grossed $226 million about, which is way off. I mean, way off from the previous installment. It's still going to be profitable, and it's doing well overseas. But I think a lot of these movies that are doing well overseas, like Transformers and Mockingjay and even Interstellar, I think that's more because it's an emerging market, and there's a newness factor to it. And you're getting more and more theaters, and there's a great expansion happening overseas, not because people actually like the movies better. And that I don't necessarily think that reflects on better movies, because like I said, this is a economics thing. It has nothing to do with quality of entertainment. It doesn't stop Mockingjay from topping the box office. It beat Penguins of Madagascar, which only made $25 million the weekend, which is a bit soft for that kind of a spinoff movie. But I mean, you're dealing with Big Hero 6 right now. And it's also splitting the kids' audience, because there's a lot of kids that are going to see Mockingjay. And then finally, Horrible Bosses came in at number 5 with only $15 million for the weekend, $22 for the 5-day, which is very low. But that's to be expected for this kind of a sequel. A lot of times you get these movies and they get a sequel and it turns out to not do as well. The Horrible Bosses, the first one, I think was more of a phenomenon that year that it opened. This weekend, I think Mockingjay is going to win again because there's nothing new. There's nothing opposing it, even. A pyramid's not going to... I'd be surprised if the pyramid makes $10 million. But Mockingjay will probably be around 20. It's dropping like a stone because that's what these front-loaded sequels do. I'll be surprised if it does much more than $300 million total in the domestic box office. Next week, you're going to see much bigger numbers. Mockingjay will go down. The only reason Mockingjay's going to win is that it has nothing opposing it. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD roundup. First of all, The Simpsons season 17. What's amazing about The Simpsons is they've just released this week season 17, which is like 10 years old. I think it's from like 2004, 2003. That's how long The Simpsons have been going. They've been going so long that their season 17 is just 10 years old. And they've got enough to do DVD and Blu-ray releases of The Simpsons. Goodness gracious, until it's an obsolete format. But it's The Simpsons. It's always fun. If you like The Simpsons, watch it. It's going to be good. There's also a film called To Kill a Man, which is interesting. I met the director of this. It's a Chilean film about revenge, about a guy who goes after the people who are tormenting his, attacking his family. It's a rough, brutal movie. It's a foreign film. I met the director when I was at the Jerusalem Film Festival. I ended up driving, we shared a ride from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And I ran into him a couple times. And a really nice guy. I mean, just a nice guy. And his luggage had gotten lost. And so he's there literally with just the shirt on his back in Tel Aviv, trying to get his luggage. And then he's talking to the airline. And of course, because he's coming from Chile, which was like a 20-hour flight because they bounced him around. And then he ended up on a tarmac for 3 hours. I told him, I said, it would take you less time to drive here. And he was at the end, his wit's end. The poor guy lost his luggage and ended up having to get the airline send him like 50 euros a day or something like that to buy some clothes. And I ran into him at a party. And we're like, hey, how you doing? I go, did you get some clean underwear? He's like, not yet. Because he had nothing. A poor guy. But, you know, I got to admit, he took it in stride. And I did not get a chance to see his movie in Jerusalem. I tried. I just couldn't. But seeing it on DVD. So anybody else can check it out on DVD. To Kill a Man is out. Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, which is the new Planet of the Apes movie, which came out this summer. Decent enough. Not as good as Rise of the Planet of the Apes. I have to say, and part of it is because Dawn of the Planet of the Apes is following Battle for the Planet of the Apes, whereas Rise of the Planet of the Apes is following Conquest of the Planet of the Apes. If you go back to the original Planet of the Apes series, my favorite Planet of the Apes movies is Conquest of the Planet of the Apes, and Battle for the Planet of the Apes is, it's the waning end of the series. It's the last episode in the series, and it was the weakest one, in my opinion. The 100-Foot Journey, which is a charming, wonderful film with Helen Mirren as a woman who runs a French bistro and an Indian family builds a restaurant across the street. And it's a great little movie that you watch with your mom until you get to the end when they add 20 minutes of extra crap for the son of the guy who she's feuding with. And then it becomes just an awful movie. So 100-Foot Journey is great. Watch it until they resolve Helen Mirren's character's story and then turn it off because the rest of it's just pretentious nonsense. The Congress, which is an interesting film starring Robin Wright as a version of herself, selling her likeness and image to a movie company in perpetuity. And then it's weird because she ends up having to confront people in this bizarre animated world. It's one of those movies. It's not a great movie, but it's worth seeing just because it's so out of the box. It's just completely bizarre. And then, as I mentioned before, As Above, So Below is out. Not a very good found footage movie. Of course, not very many found footage movies are good. Singer of the Week is Jingle All the Way 2, because Larry the Cable Guy. Who wants to replace Sinbad and Schwarzenegger with Larry the Cable Guy? I mean, I'm okay with Larry the Cable Guy, but this just seems like a bad idea from the get-go. That's it. I'm done for the week. Next week, we're going to be talking about Top 5 by Chris Rock, Inherent Vice by P.T. Anderson, and Exodus, God and Kings by Ridley Scott. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.